It's a great pleasure to be back in Perth. I know it's come as a great surprise to a number of people that someone from the East Coast, this is my second trip to Perth this year, and I've got another one planned. So for some of us on the East Coast, we have already noticed where Western Australia is, regardless of the AFL. It's also a pleasure to have an opportunity to talk about the role of our business liaison program in the formulation of monetary policy. As you can imagine, at the Reserve Bank of Australia, we spend a lot of time analysing a lot of data from a lot of different sources. We think that the information that we collect from businesses across Australia through our state offices in Adelaide, Brisbane, Melbourne, of course Perth, and our head offices in Sydney has been a valuable part of that data collection process. To start with today, I'm going to talk or say a few general words about the Business Liaison Program and the sorts of contribution we think that the process of collecting these data have made to our understanding of economic developments. Then I'm going to highlight four areas where we think where the information we've collected from the Liaison Program have been particularly useful for understanding recent economic developments. The first area that I'm going to focus on is the evolution of the mining investment cycle. The second area that I'm going to focus on is the responsiveness of the construction sector to changes in interest rates and whether this has changed over time. I have absolutely no doubt, given the size of the crowd here today, that a number of you have answered questions as a part of our Perth Business Liaison program on this very topic. The third area that I'm going to talk about is non-mining business investment and understanding why it hasn't picked up in the way we may have expected it to. And finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about how information from the Liaison Program has helped us to understand the dynamics operating in the labour market. So starting with some general facts about our Business Liaison Program. We have a team of about 15 economists in the program and support staff across our offices around the country. Their role is to represent the bank in different states and to talk to local businesses about the conditions that they face. Most of the businesses are asked a standard set of questions about their demand conditions, employment, things like their pricing situation, both for their company and for their industry. We also ask a variety of questions that are of particular interest to us on topics that are relevant to current economic policy. So each state office meets with a broad range of businesses, public organisations and community groups from across all industries to get a balanced read on economic conditions. In general terms, we think that there are several benefits to having a liaison program. The first is that we collect information that complements the information we receive from other sources. It can be very valuable to have an independent source of information, particularly if the published data or the official data are sending conflicting or noisy signals about what's happening. For example, it's possible to talk to liaison contacts about the economic impact of natural disasters such as cyclones or floods almost immediately. This sort of information is typically only available weeks, if not months later, from official published sources. The second benefit is that having conversations with individual firms allows us to get much more nuanced view of what's happening in the economy. As an example, aggregate statistics will tell you that the manufacturing sector is in structural decline. When we go to our liaison program and talk to manufacturing firms, it's clear that this is true for a number of firms, but we also find plenty of examples of manufacturing firms that are being very successful. More generally, the liaison program helps the bank and the bank staff understand how each industry is structured and how individual firms within those industries are responding to the challenges and the opportunities faced by the industry as a whole. This sort of information can be particularly helpful for spotting emerging trends and flagging potential risks to our forecasts. Finally, and relatedly, discussions with liaison contacts allow us to get deeper insights into the factors driving economic developments. One of the best examples of this is the work our liaison team has done on the factors affecting investment decisions within firms. This is a topic I'll come back to in a couple of minutes as I highlight four examples of how the liaison we do across the country is informing the bank's current view on economic conditions. As I mentioned at the outset, the first topic I want to discuss is the mining investment cycle. So this has clearly been an important driver of economic developments in the Australian economy, and obviously the Western Australian economy in particular, over the past decade. Through the 2000s, the increase in demand for commodities from emerging markets, including China, led to significant increases in commodity prices and, consequently, an increase in mining investment in resource-producing countries such as Australia. Mining investment peaked at about 8% of GDP in around 2012. A bit before that, commodity prices had started to fall as the investment in productive capacity started to translate into increased supply. More recently, falls in commodity prices have also reflected a slowing in the growth in demand for commodities from China and other parts of East Asia. Liaison with resource producers and businesses supplying the mining industry with goods and services has provided us with a broad range of information that has allowed the bank to effectively monitor the evolution of the mining boom and the impact that it's had on the rest of the economy. For example, liaison from our Western Australian office has provided us with information about the extent to which mining investment used imported inputs or domestically produced goods and services. This allowed us to make quite informed views or produce quite informed views about the nature of spillovers to the rest of the economy many years before these data were available from official sources. Liaison has also provided us with quite accurate information about the timing and magnitude of the downturn in the mining investment cycle, and that has been a significant, created a significant improvement to our ability to forecast. The transition from the investment phase to the production phase of the mining boom is one of the important drivers of the developments in the domestic economy today. And as with the upswing of the mining investment boom, I don't need to tell people in Perth what impact the declines in mining investment and commodity prices can have on economic activity. I like to show this graph because it shows how strongly export volumes have grown as the production capacity created by the mining investment boom has ramped up. But GDP growth in aggregate has been below average since mining investment peaked in 2012. At about the same time, the unemployment rate started to increase. These circumstances have contributed to the Reserve Bank Board's decision to lower interest rates over recent years. So this brings me to my second topic, which is, as an important part of our task in providing policy advice, we have to understand what sort of effect we expect any given monetary policy decision to have on the rest of the economy. And one of the important questions that we've had to answer is what effect lower interest rates are likely to have on the construction sector. The housing construction sector, as many people in the audience would already know, has traditionally been one of the most interest-sensitive sectors of the Australian economy. Lower interest rates typically lead to higher housing prices, and this provides an incentive to build more housing. All these phases of the monetary policy transmission mechanism can be seen in this graph. And this is a part of the monetary policy transmission mechanism in action. However, if there are constraints on the ability to start new building projects in market segments where demand is strong, either because there are shortages of suitable land or it's difficult to source suitable labour or materials, lowering interest rates could lead to excessive risk-taking without much benefit in the form of an increase in actual housing investment. While there is a lot of information available on the housing sector from official ABS data and other published sources, the Liaison Program has been particularly helpful for providing information on the ability of the housing sector to respond to upswings in housing demand in a timely manner. Liaison contacts in the building industry, which includes builders, renovators, land developers, architects, legal firms, are able to provide us with detailed information from a variety of perspectives. These liaison contacts have pointed to a range of supply-side issues that are important factors for understanding developments in the Australian housing market. These include the length and complexity of the planning process, issues related to the provision and funding of infrastructure, land ownership, geographic constraints, and other challenges related to infill development. And from what I heard from Paul's opening address, these are a lot of issues that UDIA is intimately involved with. Unsurprisingly, the degree to which these sorts of constraints are present varies across locations, and Liaison has helped us to understand these differences. We know, for example, that the availability of land with appropriate infrastructure is an issue in Sydney and some parts of southeast Queensland. We know that for a period of time this was also an issue in Perth, but the availability of land with suitable infrastructure in Perth has improved. Some liaison contacts have also raised concerns about the availability of land for apartment developments, particularly in Sydney, as the stock of suitable sites has been gradually depleted over recent years. Liaison contacts suggest that this has not been such an issue in Melbourne or other capitals, and this helps to explain some of the differences that we have seen in price growth for detached houses versus apartments, and for differences across the different capitals. Liaison has also provided us with valuable information on the availability of suitable labour in the construction industry. The consensus appears to be that aside from a few very specific skills such as bricklaying, there have been relatively few skill shortages in the construction sector given the size of the pickup that we've seen recently. A part of the explanation appears to be that many people leaving the mining sector have skills that have made it possible for them to find jobs in the construction industry. So turning to my third area, which is non-mining business investment, while we've seen growth in the activity of the household sector improve, and this includes both consumption and housing construction, we found that non-mining business investment hasn't actually changed in level terms for several years. In addition to what we've seen already happen, we have leading indicators of investment intentions from sources such as the ABS's Capital Expenditure Survey, and these typically suggest that non-mining business investment is not likely to pick up over the next year or so. In fact, the lack of a pickup in non-mining business investment has been flagged as a risk in our growth forecast for some time. This is another area where we found information from the Liaison Program to be particularly valuable. When we ask our liaison contacts why they are not planning to increase their investment, they come back to us with responses like, we actually have enough capacity to meet current levels of demand, we're not sufficiently confident of a pickup in demand to warrant undergoing risky investment, and even answers like business conditions are just generally too uncertain. Liaison contacts do not report that the current levels of interest rates are discouraging them from investing, but neither do they typically indicate that low levels of interest rates are directly encouraging them to invest more. Given the importance of understanding why non-mining business investment has not picked up, our liaison team have spent quite a bit of time delving further into the question of how firms actually make their investment decisions. This exercise has suggested that a typical firm in the bank's liaison program evaluates discretionary capital expenditure using a variety of methods, including discounted cash flow analysis. And the bottom line of that is, to proceed with a given project, its expected return must exceed a firm's hurdle rate. When we ask questions about what sort of hurdle rates firms use to make these decisions, we find that liaison contacts typically use hurdle rates that are often several percentage points above the estimated cost of capital. Some contacts have also said that they've lowered their hurdle rates in recent times, but many also report that their hurdle rates have not been changed very often, and in some cases have not been altered for several years. This is a bit of a surprise, given that interest rates and therefore the cost of capital have fallen quite significantly over this period. This behaviour has also been noted in the academic literature, in other surveys of Australian businesses, and in other countries. It all goes to suggest that many businesses do not calculate hurdle rates as a fixed markup over the cost of capital. Okay. When asked, liaison contacts have indicated that hurdle rates may not be sensitive to changes in the cost of capital because the true cost of capital is uncertain and unobserved. Another explanation contacts give is that changes in interest rates are often temporary. Liaison suggests that firms also evaluate investment decisions with reference to a payback period, which is the number of years it would take for the cash flows generated by the project to cover the initial capital outlay. Maximum payback periods are often fairly short, and we get numbers like 3 years quite regularly when we ask the question. So this implies that the required rates of return for a given capital outlay are quite high. The use of this method partly reflects the premium contacts place on recouping cash. Some firms also report that they use the payback period to refine the shortlist of potential projects because they only really have appetite for a certain amount of investment or for a certain number of projects. In this case, shorter payback periods favour projects with front-loaded returns, and it's understood by the people who are using this method that there are quite likely to be value-creating projects that are not pursued. The conclusion of all this questioning and answers we've received from the liaison program suggests that the process of making investment decisions is much more complicated than the textbooks suggest, and the explanations for why non-mining investment has not picked up are not likely to be simple. So turning to my fourth topic, where the liaison program has helped us get a more nuanced and clear view of what's happening with economic developments, I'm going to talk about the labour market and how our view of the labour market has changed over the past year. Earlier this year, the bank had expected that the unemployment rate would rise further, given that economic growth appeared to be below trend. However, labour force data have suggested that the unemployment rate has since stabilised in a range of about 6 to 6.25%. Economic theory gives us some clues about where to look for an explanation for this apparent inconsistency. But once again, the liaison program has provided us with evidence that has helped us distinguish between competing explanations and has led us to revise our forecasts for the unemployment rate. We now expect that the unemployment rate will remain relatively stable until growth in the economy picks up significantly from its current pace. An important part of reconciling the ability of the labour market to improve with below average growth is that wage growth has declined markedly across most industries. This graph shows two different measures of aggregate wage growth. Economics tells us that when the unemployment rate is above its natural rate, which we expect that it is at the moment, there should be downward pressure on wage growth. However, the decline in wage growth since 2012 is larger than the historical relationships would suggest. Liaison tells us that wages are playing a more significant role in the adjustment of the economy to lower commodity prices and the transition from the investment to the production phase of the mining boom than they have in previous episodes of structural change. For example, the recent emphasis on cost-cutting in the mining sector has led to job losses, but there are also many examples of mining and mining services firms negotiating lower wage outcomes with existing workers and employing new workers on significantly lower wages to help keep mining operations open in the face of lower commodity prices. Liaison also suggests that unlike previous episodes of structural change, many of the workers employed in the investment phase of the mining boom had previous experience in the civil and residential construction sectors and therefore have more transferable skills than workers who became unemployed in previous periods of structural adjustment. This has enabled them to find alternative jobs, albeit often at lower wage rates. While the increase in available labour supply may go some way towards explaining why wage growth has been lower in some industries, such as construction, it does not explain the generalised decline in wage growth across all industries and indeed all regions of Australia. The fact that near-term inflation expectations have also fallen can provide some further reconciliation. Surveys of households and unions and financial market measures of near-term inflation expectations have been a little below their inflation targeting averages in recent times. Having said that, longer-term inflation expectations have not changed significantly. Some liaison contacts have also reported that inflation benchmarks applied to wage negotiations have been a little lower over the past few years. Another factor that might explain the prevalence of lower wage growth across industries and regions is that employees appear to be particularly concerned about their employment prospects. This message comes through clearly from household surveys, this is what's represented in this graph, as well as discussions with liaison contacts. This suggests that employees have been more willing to accept lower wage growth because they are concerned about their prospects for re-employment should they lose their jobs. Reports from the bank's liaison program indicate that although wage growth has fallen, there is reluctance among many firms and employees to bargain for wage growth below expected inflation. Outcomes lower than this would imply a fall in real consumer wages, and firms report that this generally would be viewed as having a negative effect on worker morale and worker productivity, as well as on the ability to retain high-quality staff. So while the decline in wage growth has been significant, it might have been larger still if not for this element of rigidity in real wage growth. These examples, I think, help to illustrate how valuable the Business Liaison Program is to the bank's understanding of how the economy works. The information we receive from businesses is particularly useful for understanding how the economy is adjusting to significant structural changes associated with falling mining investment and commodity prices. We have a dedicated team of economists putting in a lot of time and effort talking to businesses and asking questions that are relevant to our understanding of current policy considerations. But clearly, the value of the program also comes from the time and effort businesses put into this process. We're very appreciative of this, and people in the audience who've participated in the Perth Business Liaison Program should pat themselves on the back. And we certainly look forward to continuing to build on the relationships that we have with our liaison contacts in the future.
We've got time for a couple of questions from the floor, and I know that there can be a reluctance to make yourself known and make questions, so I'll ask the first one, but really seriously, we've got time for two after that. I was really interested, Alex, in the comments you made about the hurdle rates and the fairly rapid turnaround on investment. In the development industry, we have very, very long periods before we actually get a return, and we have quite a high risk profile. Did you find this through any of your liaison teams, that there was a relationship between the rate of return, the hurdle rate, and how risky or the length of return that was required? Or is that something, did you want to make any comment in relation to that?
So when we've spoken to firms about the hurdle rates and the way they make these investment decisions, I think it's pretty clear that in situations where they feel like the risk environment is greater than normal or things are more uncertain than normal, they do tend to respond by either increasing the hurdle rates, putting an extra margin in there, and the other way that seems to be more prevalent is that sometimes they actually shorten the payback period. So they're much more willing to invest in projects with these front-loaded returns in an uncertain environment than they might normally be.
You've just given our wording back to the government about the development industry investment. Sorry, I was teasing. Are there any questions from the floor? Yes, we have one down there, and I'm sorry, I can't see who it is from the lights. No, the lights are tricky. Yeah.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Tessio Cocos, Woodson Management. How do you work out, or how do you choose the people who you liaise with in Perth? Thank you.
I probably can't answer that in very great detail. What I do know is that we put a lot of effort into getting broad industry coverage. So we do make sure that we have liaison contacts across a broad range of industries. Obviously, when we come to Perth, some of the expertise is with the mining industry, so we have very strong liaison focus on the mining industry, perhaps more so than in other states. Owen Bailey is currently our senior representative in Perth, so he might have more specific things to say. And I guess the point about mining goes some way to saying that we tend to adapt the frequency with which we speak to particular industries depending on how important those industries are, or understanding developments in those industries are for the aggregate picture. So, for example, I was speaking to someone before, we've certainly put a bit more effort into understanding some of the supply side constraints in the housing industry of late, because it's a particularly important factor for understanding developments at the aggregate level.
Mr. Hemsley, and the microphone is coming.
Thanks very much, Alex, for your address. Warwick Hemsley from QS Patterson. We don't often get somebody from such a lofty position of the RBA as yourself, and I'm sure many people in the room would like to hear your views about the balancing act that the RBA is going through with the Sydney and Melbourne property markets at such stellar levels, whereas in Perth, as many in the room would know, we've had a very flat market. It's pulling up quite sharply. In fact, prices, I think, fell 4% in the June quarter alone. And just what are some of the issues around that, and how is the RBA viewing that? Your current views would be most welcome.
So I think the answer to the question is we put a lot of effort into understanding the differences across the different property markets. Ultimately, the Reserve Bank is responsible for macroeconomic objectives, and we have a monetary policy tool that is relatively blunt. So our ability to customise our monetary policy tool for differences across regions is quite limited. Clearly, the issues in different housing sectors have been noted, and the financial stability considerations is a topic that's been discussed in the Council of Financial Regulators. And I think one of the things that we've, as a regulating community or official policy-making community, have focused on is making sure that the financial stability risks are mitigated as best we can. So that largely falls to APRA. So they're responsible for thinking about the quality of the lending standards, banks' capitalisation, things like their risk management practices. So most of the response specifically to the housing market have come in the form of changes in APRA's regulation and the level of scrutiny that they've put into those sorts of considerations.
Are there any last questions? Otherwise, we have to wrap this up. If nobody is burning, I really want to thank you, Alex. That was absolutely fascinating. Could you please join me in thanking her?